Welcome to the Quill Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quill Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dowell, and we're reading my work in progress friendship album, 1934. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quill Fiction community. Now, on to the story. Chapter 30. Emmeline sat at her dressing table, a notepad open in front of her. Ever since she decided to throw a party for Bess and Joe, she'd been swimming in ideas. She hadn't had a real party in ever so long, not if she didn't count their annual Christmas party, and Emmeline wasn't inclined to. The Christmas party was strictly business, a way of making nice with Thomas's important clients as well as various notable figures from Milton Falls' ruling class. Florence quite unapologetically described it as dull as dishwater, and every year had to be begged to come. But a party for Bess and Joe in September, say for 30 or so guests? Why, it would be absolutely charming. The question was, should it be an afternoon tea? An evening dinner? If it were a dinner, then Emmeline could serve champagne, and she did so love champagne. But could Priest drink champagne? Well, they drank wine every Sunday, didn't they? And Emmeline's understanding was that the Episcopal priests were given a certain amount of leeway when it came to earthly delights. She stood and began to pace the small room. Emmeline Grangerfield was a woman of many talents, and surely party planning was at the top of the list. Her Aunt Margaret deserved much of the credit. She'd impressed upon Emmeline at a young age that it was a lady's job to offer hospitality to friends and acquaintances alike on a regular basis. Whether it was a luncheon for a small group of close friends or a ball to celebrate an important anniversary, a lady knew how to plan a menu, set a table, decorate a room, no matter how large or small, and how to hire help. Speaking of help, she'd need to check with Cora to see if she would cook and if her daughter Dolly would be available to serve. Dolly had worked at Christmas parties in the past and always had friends she could recruit. All colored women, of course, many of them from Dolly and Cora's church. Emmeline had a sudden strange thought. What if this were the same church that Dorothy attended? Would that be odd, to have Dorothy a guest at a party where she knew the help? Funny to realize that Emmeline herself had been in that situation once or twice, not as a guest, but as the help. She had waited tables as a student at the University of Kansas, much to Aunt Margaret's dismay. It was Aunt Margaret's opinion that a lady didn't work, which was fine if a lady was of independent means, which Emmeline most certainly hadn't been. While the steakhouse she worked at wasn't a student hangout, on occasion someone from her classes would show up with their parents for a celebratory meal. Emmeline found those situations intensely uncomfortable. On the whole, she didn't mind working as a waitress. In fact, she rather enjoyed it. But taking orders from fellow students made her feel, well, like the merchant's daughter that she was trying very hard not to be. It was all so strange to think about. Fortunately, Emmeline reminded herself as she began to pace the room, she didn't have to think about it. That was the lovely thing about being Emmeline Grangerfield. She could think about what she wanted to think about and brush the rest away, including the thought that while she would happily send Dorothy and Wallace an invitation for Bess's and Joe's party, she would be less eager to invite them to, say, the annual Christmas party or the party she would have for Margie upon her high school graduation. But it didn't pay to dig into those sorts of things, she told herself, and again, why should she? She could choose comfort over controversy whenever she wished. She'd let that awful Mrs. Roosevelt take care of social equality. Emmeline had a party to plan. "You getting your morning walk in?" Cora stood in the doorway, a small silver platter with the morning's mail in her hand. "I don't blame you for doing it inside. It's too hot to live outside." Emmeline crossed the room to retrieve her correspondence. "I can't bear the thought of stepping out the front door, although I've promised Margie to take her shopping this afternoon. School starts in 3 weeks." "I bet all they have at the shops is woolen things for winter," Cora said, handing over the platter. "You might have to have one or two dresses made, or you could sew them yourself. You can sew a dress, can't you?" "You know I can sew a dress," Emmeline said, giving her housekeeper a cutting look. "I sewed all of my clothes from the time I was a girl all the way to my engagement party. But once I could afford to pay a seamstress, I never looked back." "I always liked sewing my girls' clothes," Cora said. "We had some good talks while they was getting measured or trying pieces on to see how they fit. Good mother-daughter talks. That is, when they weren't fussing at me because I'd poked them with a pin or some such." "I wish I had the time for it," Emmeline said as she took a seat at her dressing table and fanned out the mail before her. "But I'm so awfully busy, you see." "Oh, I know it," Cora agreed. "You're busy from dawn till dusk. All I'm saying is that it's too bad. Won't be long before Margie's out of the house. I heard her telling that little friend of hers, that Gloria Longfield, that she thought her new boyfriend might be the one she ends up marrying." Emmeline waved away the comment. "Oh, you know girls her age, always planning their weddings to whatever boy just bought them a soda at the confectioner's shop." "Still, that doesn't change the fact that in a couple of years she'll most likely be married or off at college." Cora paused. "You think she'll go to college?" "Oh, she'll go to college," Emmeline said. "A girl needs as much education as she can get these days, even if it's just so that she'll be a better wife and mother." Cora shook her head. "Oh, you can get educated about anything nowadays, even things that come natural to most people." She started out the door, then turned to say, "You ought to make that girl a dress. I bet you'd make something beautiful, the way your quilts are beautiful." Emmeline took a moment to enjoy Cora's compliment, Cora's compliments being so few and far between. She supposed the woman had a point. Once upon a time, Emmeline did sew some lovely things, and it had been a while since she'd felt close to Margie. Perhaps they should work on some dresses together. Not that Emmeline had the time, she thought again as she looked at the mail in front of her. There was, after all, a party to be planned and a quilt to be made. Earlier in the week, she'd sent Dorothy, Eula, Elise, and Edwina a letter outlining her ideas for Bess and Joe's quilt. The Lover's Lane blocks they'd be stitching would be ridiculously simple for everyone in their bee, with the possible exception of Elise. But the ease of its construction meant that the quilt could be put together quickly. And, of course, the name Lover's Lane was simply irresistible. Now she had the replies, which she assumed all were in the affirmative. Still, she'd always loved opening mail, and so she pulled out her letter opener and made a neat slit in each envelope. It was interesting to see everyone's handwriting. Dorothy's small, neat script, Eula's boxy print, Edwina's florid cursive that sprawled across the paper. Elise, much to Emmeline's surprise, had typed her letter. Was that allowed in social correspondence? Emmeline wondered. It seemed awfully something. Businesslike, she supposed. Impersonal. Was this the new fashion? She didn't much like it if it was, and would counsel Margie against it. Emmeline checked her watch. It was almost noon, and she and Margie had planned on leaving at 1. Perhaps after they went to the dress shops on East Main, Emmeline could convince Margie to stop by Martha Leary's sewing shop to look at patterns. Margie knew how to sew, but she'd never taken to it with any enthusiasm. Maybe it was time for her to try again. She might enjoy sewing now that she was more interested in clothes. Emmeline remembered how much she'd loved picking out fabric for a new dress when she was Margie's age. It was the dreaming she'd loved, really, imagining how she'd look and how people would look at her when she entered a room. It was like making a costume for a play. The more Emmeline thought about it, the more she warmed to the idea. What if she and Margie made matching dresses for Bess and Joe's party? Oh, now that would be charming. And Margie was sure to love the idea as much as Emmeline did. "We're not twins, Mother," Margie said in the car after Emmeline had presented her with the notion of making matching dresses. "And what might look stylish on you might look terribly, well, dowdy on me." Emmeline clamped her lips shut and inhaled deeply through her nose. She even allowed herself to entertain for a moment that perhaps Margie was right. But if that were the case, why was Margie always borrowing her clothes and her jewelry? She'd even borrowed one of Emmeline's hats. "Don't say it," she counseled herself. "Keep your mouth closed." Oh, but it was so hard and so unfair. Still, Emmeline was the grown-up in this situation, and she needed to behave like one. "Perhaps you're right, darling. Besides, there's something off-putting when young girls appear in clothes better suited for grown women." "I'm not exactly a young girl," Margie protested. Emmeline suppressed a smile. "No, of course not. I misspoke. You're a young woman, and you want to look as fresh and sweet as the dew on a rose petal. Let's see what we can find you at Miller's Dress Shop. They always have such lovely things in their junior miss section." "Maybe we should make matching outfits," Margie conceded, clearly not happy with the idea of a junior miss dress. Emmeline didn't blame her. The dresses in the young ladies' department often seemed to be larger-size versions of little girl dresses with perhaps an extra tuck here or a shorter hemline there. "Then let's go straight to the sewing shop," Emmeline said. "The wonderful thing about making your own dress is you have so many more choices in fabric, in pattern." "I get to pick the pattern," Margie put in quickly. "And the fabric for my dress. You can choose whatever fabric you'd like for yours." "Why, thank you, dear," Emmeline said in the sweetest, most motherly voice she possessed. "That's awfully kind." An hour later, Emmeline was finding it harder and harder to summon the sweet, motherly side of herself. Margie sat at the long oak table in the back of Martha Leary's shop, studying the fall pattern catalogs with far more interest than she'd ever shown her school books. She'd gone back and forth, unable to choose a pattern because there were too many marvelous ones to pick from. The problem with making matching dresses, Emmeline realized now, is that Margie may have been right. There really wasn't much middle ground between a 15-year-old girl and a 38-year-old woman, at least when it came to fashion. The dresses that were catching Margie's eye were absolutely perfect for Margie. Most of them would look a little ridiculous on Emmeline. She supposed that she could make alterations on her dress, although she had to admit it had been so long since she'd sewn a dress that she wasn't confident about making alterations to a pattern. And while she had made many, many dresses, now that she thought about it, they'd been fairly simple constructions, nothing nearly as sophisticated as the patterns Margie was pointing to with increasing levels of excitement. The nice thing was, Margie actually did seem excited. She was tugging at her hair the way she always had as a little girl when she'd been promised a treat, a slice of cherry pie for dessert, or a day spent at the lake with her cousins. Those were the days before Margie had transferred her affections away from Emmeline and on to Thomas. "Oh, it's just a phase," everyone had said when Emmeline lamented about this state of affairs. Thomas might be the girl's favorite parent right now, but sooner or later she'd return to her mother. Emmeline had been waiting for this great return now for, what, 10 years? She wondered if that little ditty, "A son's a son till he takes a wife, a daughter's a daughter for all of her life," would prove true in her own case, or if both of her children would turn away from her as adults. Perhaps Tommy would remain true. He was such an affectionate, thoughtful boy. Surely he'd never love another woman as much as he loved his mother, not deep down. While Margie searched for the perfect dress pattern, Emmeline walked among the fabrics, running a finger over this length of cotton and that bolt of rayon crepe. She didn't think she'd been a bad mother overall, but perhaps she'd been a negligent one. Maybe she should have never taken up a writing career. But no, she had done most of her writing at home, usually when the children were at school. Yet, even when her writing chores were done for the day, there had been so many other things filling up her calendar pages. Luncheons and teas, charities and charity balls. As the wife of a prominent businessman, she'd been expected to be social. It was rather a full-time job, one she'd trained for, well, since she was Margie's age. Margie had turned 15 in May and would be starting her sophomore year in high school next month. That meant that Emmeline had 3 more years with her daughter. 3 more years to cultivate the closeness that she yearned for, a closeness she'd never had with her own mother, at least not that she could remember, having lost her mother at age 3. But how to go about it? Emmeline supposed they could travel together, even short trips to Columbus, where they could stay a night or two at a nice hotel and go to the shops and museums during the day. She'd never taken either of the children to Emporia. Perhaps she and Margie could go visit Emmeline's friend and fellow quilt maker, Rose Kretzinger. Margie would adore Rose. While she might consider Emmeline dumpy, she could never mistake Rose for anything other than fashionable and fascinating. Making her way back to Margie, the idea of taking her daughter to Emporia took fire in Emmeline's mind. They'd have to go soon. They only had a few weeks before school started. Something would have to be done with Tommy. Perhaps he could stay with Florence. She'd be settled into her new little abode soon enough, and how wonderful if Tommy, who adored his Aunt Florence, could be her first guest. Yes, that was the ticket, Emmeline thought. She needed to spend more time with her daughter, and by Jupiter, she was going to do just that. If it meant cutting back on other projects, she would. She was rather tired of charities and charity balls, truth be told. She was even rather fatigued when it came to brunches and teas. Naturally, she was still excited about having a party for Joe and Bess, but that was different. Bess was her friend. Not to mention that Margie could help in planning the party. Why, they'd plan it on the train to Emporia. Emmeline wanted to dance a little jig or jump up and down. She felt so excited. Oh, the fun she and Margie would have together. Giving up things wouldn't feel at all sacrificial, not if it brought her closer to her daughter. Why, she'd give up everything in the world for that. Except for her writing. She wouldn't give up her writing, Emmeline realized with a start. Because the fact was, and this stopped her right in her tracks, she was a writer. Take away all the layers, the society life, the wealth, the fashionable clothes, the beauty. Emmeline Grangerfield was two things at heart, a mother and a writer. And that's when it struck her. She was going to write a novel. But first, she was taking Margie to Emporia. Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast. We're reading Friendship Album 1934, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dow, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.